It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Access of Easy podcast, the latest and greatest in data breaching and overreaching. This is the audio compendium, the sidekick to the weekly newsletter on accessofeasy.com from EasyDNS. Len, what's going on over there, buddy? Summer's almost over. We're basically in the home stretch here. The darkness at the end of the tunnel instead of the light.
When I drive into work in the morning this week, I had to leave the lights on for the whole journey in.
No.
Yep. So that's probably indication that, you know, we're coming to an end. Yeah. This summer. Oh. And school is in session in less than 2 weeks. It's
very soon.
Two Tuesdays from now.
Yeah.
So
get excited, man. Get excited. You know what though? This is my first summer with a kid, and I'll tell you, it absolutely flew by. Like flew by. It feels like I didn't even have a summer. Every day was just like such a blur with a child compared to when it's just you and the wife. So I don't really know what to say about that, but I just want to note that time is definitely moving faster than before. Let's do last week's quote. Those who can make you believe absurdities can make you commit atrocities. That was by Voltaire. Charles got it right. Charles got it right first, but we will give it to John, who was next to get it right. All right. Sorry, Charles. Congrats, John. This week's quote, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm a conspiracy analyst. If you know who that was by, put in the comments and you get your next round of renewals on EasyDNS. Don't forget, you can only get the answer from the bumper stickers of the cars in front of you while you're stuck in traffic. No Googling, no searching, none of that stuff. You know, it's funny. That kind of reminds me of it's like an interview I saw a little while ago about prediction markets. And how prediction markets are putting like a nice veneer on gambling. So you can just tell people that you're not a degenerate gambler. You're just addicted to predicting. Mm-hmm. you can find a different way to spin your degenerate habits.
They'll do anything to part with their money. If you're whatever. There's lots of ways to do it nowadays, right? Like it's so easy. You don't have to get off the couch to be broke.
I love it. Okay, where do you want to start? We got a few stories today. You pick. It's up to you.
Are you a VPN guy?
I am not normally, but I do appreciate and understand the importance of a VPN.
You understand a good VPN is better than a bad one.
Yeah, sure. Sure, yeah. Well, like most things, Lab, good one's better than a bad one, yeah.
Citizen Lab came up with a report that showed off these, I guess, popular? Never heard of these VPNs before.
Yeah, Turbo, me neither. No.
Snap, VPN Monster. Look, a lot of these may not be what they appear to be, especially when they're free, because it looks like these VPNs might be different apps run by different companies, actually owned by the same few people, the same few companies out there. What this does, it creates a false sense of being secure, because you don't really know who the heck is handling your data. When you're using a VPN, they're getting access to everything you send out. So this report from Citizen Lab was saying that some of these VPNs downloaded millions of times. They have a connection with the Chinese security firm.
No.
Yeah. Keyhole 360, and it's no relation or affiliation with Xbox 360. Sounds like a crappy video game, Keyhole 360.
It's because they're looking in your keyhole when you should be when you're changing and when you're digitally naked.
So when you're dealing with Chinese companies like this, when you're dealing with VPNs that are untrustworthy, it creates a huge problem with security. And even furthermore, like even leaving that aside, they say through the study that there was outdated and weak encryption methods used by these VPNs. And that, of course, makes it easy for a hacker to break in and get access to data. They also discovered that some of the applications have a single hard-coded password built into the app. So all you need to do is get access to that password, and you could decrypt all the traffic that is being sent by the app and nullify all the privacy that's going along with it you are a dummy for using these things. So, right? Just because it's free doesn't mean it's free. If somebody is a product, and that would be you. I would recommend, if you are going to be using a VPN, just my humble recommendation, obviously do your own research. Mulvad, M-U-L-L-V-A-D. They have a wonderful record. You could pay with your Bitcoin if you want. There is no association between yourself and the VPN, because when you generate an account, it's a randomly generated number. Do yourself a favor if you're going to use a VPN. Do some research. Don't go with the free crappy options. Use something a little bit better than that.
Nothing is free. How many times do we have to learn this lesson? I want to read a selection from the article, if you don't mind, if you'll indulge me. You mentioned this as well, but I'll just go through it one more time. Researchers identified three families of VPNs that are secretly operated by the same entity. The most notable group includes Innovative Connecting, Autumn Breeze, and Lemon Clove, which have 700 million downloads combined. These companies distribute apps such as TurboVPN, VPN Monster, SnapVPN, and are linked to Chinese security firm Kehoe, like you said, which has been sanctioned by the U.S. government. Why are they allowed on the U.S. Play Store? One question we need to answer there. It is worth noting that TurboVPN and SnapVPN were also named in the Tech Transparency Project's June 2025 report. Again, why are they in the Play Store? Which cited national security concerns related to the possibility these VPNs were transferring U.S. data to China. Here's the fun part. A second family of providers with over 380 million downloads included Matrix Mobile PTE Limited, Foraya Technology Limited, and a third family included Fast Potato Limited and Free Connected Limited. Do these not just sound like scams? Like, how is anyone downloading stuff from an app provider? Like, on the Play Store, it gives you the name of the app plus the publisher, basically. Who is going to look for a VPN? Which shows you have some level of technical competence, right? I need a VPN. I'll try the App Store. And then you download the one from Fast Potato. Fast Potato, Len. Like that's a 0 out of 5 name. I don't understand how this 100%. Happens. 100%. Yeah. I understand how this happens. The only issue I have is that they're talking about the most popular VPNs as though the ones downloaded on the Play Store are the most popular. I don't think that's actually true. I would say the popular ones are the ones like ExpressVPN. Mulvad's probably VPN. Up there, honestly. Nord, yeah. And there's a few other things like Malwarebytes has a VPN service. And I'm sure there's others as well. Those are the ones that are the most popular. I don't necessarily think downloads, equates to users and popularity, but that's, the methodology they chose to use. I can't really, fight them on it after the fact, but I would point that out to the listeners and viewers.
Now, if there's a lot of downloads and they could be influenced by bots, it then triggers the algorithm
to
push it. And if somebody looks and sees, it has a lot of downloads, they think there's a sense of legitimacy by having it.
It's a great point.
Downloads too. So
yeah, great point.
UK.
As always, great point.
I like the UK. We talk about them enough, and it looks like they may have had a change of heart, which is strange considering everything that is coming out from that country in the past little while. They decided, the UK government did, to abandon the Apple, or that Apple create a backdoor to its encryption systems. And they say this turnabout, this push, it's all a result of pushback from the US government and other privacy advocates out there. They're saying that it's going to endanger people's privacy, personal data, and this is just the wrong move. So for people wondering what this is all about, early 2025, the UK government, using in its Investigatory Powers Act, they issued a order to Apple, and the order was known as a technical capability notice, and it provided or aimed to force Apple to provide law enforcement with a way to break into their systems there, to break into the strong encryption. What Apple did as a response, they said, we're going to disable their ADP, their advanced data protection. And that feature was no longer going to be applicable for people in the UK. People were upset. The company was disappointed, but hey, this is what they did. It's a way to get around this for not handing over certain keys to the government. And so Apple launched a legal challenge to the courts, blah, blah, blah. And here we are. The UK government decided to say, you know what? We're not going to go ahead with it. But if they did, if Apple ended up creating something and giving access to the UK government, think of the potential problems that could come alongside with it. So not only can governments get in, but now you have a backdoor that is known and hackers could take advantage of it. And the devices, and Apple is used by billions of people. That's a lot of information people store. They think that it's being stored securely on Apple sites, Apple Cloud. And if there's a way to hack into it, to break into it, you know, a lot of people's pictures of probably their private parts are going to end up in somebody else's computer, right? It's just, this is the, apparently there was a wrong move what UK did, but they did the right decision here by saying we're not going to go ahead with it. I'm shocked that they did a turnabout here. Considering everything that's going on in the UK, this is shocking to me.
It is to me too. But you know what? Apple is... We should talk about sort of the rising tensions between America and the United Kingdom on the, you know, vis-a-vis these draconian laws about what you can say online. You know, can I call a UK politician fat? Can I say that I don't want migrants living by the thousands in hotels in my city? Can I say that, you know, what's the popular phrase over there? We want to stop the boats, or, you know, am I allowed to say that as an American when the comment can be accessed in the United Kingdom? That's one front they're sort of fighting on. Friend of the other show we do, Preston Byrne, has talked about this on Twitter a lot. You know, I think we've mentioned it here as well. The UK continues to be like choosing the weirdest hills to die on when it comes to digital, I guess, freedom, we'll call it. Freedom of speech, for sure. Trying to upend American First Amendment rights because they say that even though 4chan, for example, exists in America, the servers are American, the comment is visible in the United Kingdom. Like, an obvious losing battle, and not one that I would take, but one they seem to be intent to take to the 12th round. You have that going on. You have the UK also now trying to get into encrypted data, which I think would also probably kick the door down to iMessage encryption and other stuff that the Apple products use, device encryption. Famously, Apple products are impossibly difficult to get into for law enforcement. There's obviously, you know, I've said this a million times on the show, I won't go into the diatribe again, but there's obviously a push all over the world to get into people's private conversations, into their private lives, and make sure they're not saying anything that upsets the narrative. It's very simple. This is not about protecting children or protecting, national security. That's all nonsense. It's bull. The question is, how far will people allow this to be pushed on them? And in the States, you know, you can say what you want about Americans. A lot of people call them rednecks and hicks, but there is a true spirit of freedom there that, quite plainly, and you know, as evidenced by stories like this, doesn't exist anywhere else. Even in the cradle of democracy, you know, in Europe, that spirit's been completely extinguished. And so seeing stories like this really does give me hope. I don't know if I expect the trend to continue. Like, will the states continue to push back successfully against some of these draconian suggestions, measures, legislation? I don't know. Do you think this is a sort of a watershed moment of pushback? You're shaking your head. I'm not sure where I come down. Google is saying that they've not received any similar requests. I want to talk a bit about digital canaries as well, because
Google, by the way, we'll be talking about later.
I know. They got their own problems. But this idea of digital canaries, because I think we mentioned on the show, and if not, I'll mention it now. Part of the legislation in Europe and other places is that once you get served with an order that demands you remove encryption or demands that you give up private data, part of the order is that you can't talk about it. And so what companies were doing is putting something called digital canaries in their like quarterly earnings reports, for example. Those are public-facing documents. They're required by law. And governments are not allowed to make suggestions, demand changes, blah, 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 things that affect financial markets in that way. So what companies were doing were saying, we've not received any requests under this new legislation to, you know, blow up private data from our users. And the trick was that when that line was removed from a report, you could reliably infer that that company had been propositioned by the government to give up that data. Those things are sort of legal gray areas. And I'm trying to learn more about this because I do think it's important. But it's so new and novel that there's not really been any case law. There's no jurisprudence or precedent around some of this stuff. But I would expect that this sort of ruling, you know, lends itself favorably to that, that mechanism. Like, companies have to be able to push back. And I think part of the reason it's on the back of American companies to do it is because of the First Amendment and because of the spirit of freedom and because they're unwilling to give an inch to countries that, you know, they view as not having the moral or ethical or legal high ground. And they're correct in this case. The UK is a joke. It's a joke of a nation at this point. And I want to see how this continues. I disagree with you. I think that this could be the beginning of a significant pushback on data privacy for consumers. And I hope it is.
You're right.
Yeah.
I'm not going to hold my breath on that. And just given that what's transpired in the past little while, just saying, you know, if it was 250, like about that many years ago, taxation without representation.
Yeah.
And now if you say that now,
you go to jail. Right?
So, boy, have times have changed.
Oh my
you
God.
Don't have to toss the tea into the harbor. You go to sleep in jail.
Great point. If you, as soon as you organize a meeting about discussing tossing the tea, you go to jail.
Oh, yeah, forget
you
it.
Yeah, you don't even get to the box of the tea.
So the Bank of International Settlements, this is part of the unholy fiat Three Stooges, them, the IMF, and the World Bank. Well, the BIS, they decided to put forth a proposal, and it's for, well, to deal with anti-money laundering. And you know, if anybody could get to the bottom of anti-money laundering,
it's
the
people that
are knee-deep in fiat, right? They're very clean. They got their hands clean, no blood on their hands. They wanted to do this KYC stuff that is going to be dealing with non-custodial wallets for stuff like Bitcoin and its whatever, like digital assets. I don't want to say the word, but digital assets. And so they say that they need this. They need the standard out there to ensure that they could comply and deal with AML problems. Now, AML and KYC is normally applied to banks and other centralized services. And they want, you know, there's the rules. They want to know who their customers are. And if there's any suspicious activities, they got to then report that to the proper authorities. Non-custodial wallets, you know, it's you, the user, you full control of everything, right? It's just you. They fall outside of this KYC AML stuff, right? There's no central body over there to regulate. It's difficult for authorities to track any transactions. So potentially money laundering could exist within the system. So could cash, by the way. But we won't get into that. They say the proposal that the BIS wants to do is a self-KYC system. So instead of forcing you to give your information to a particular company, they want this system to create a compliance score. It's almost like a social credit score.
It sounds pretty familiar, doesn't it? You're right.
It really does. And they want to do this for each cryptocurrency unit or wallet. And the score would be based on the wallet's transaction history. So if your digital tokens, your digital money, whatever, comes from wallets that have already been identified through a KYC process, the score would be kind of high. But if it came from an unknown or a flagged wallet, your score would be lower. And the goal, they say, is not to force everybody to identify themselves, but they want to create a system where there's clean money is easier to identify and to use. Good luck. Good luck. We have countries out there that are draconian, like China.
Yeah.
They've banned Bitcoin numerous times. Bitcoin is still being used there. Bitcoin is still being mined over there. They want to create this system within their system, but it doesn't work. You're trying to shoehorn something like Bitcoin in a fiat world. It just doesn't work. You could try to do it, but you won't get compliance totality across the board. This is just going to be a toothless attack by them. Good luck. It's going to be fun to watch play out.
Interesting timing on the back of the Google push for KYC AML on wallets last week, right? Google had a report that, or I shouldn't say report, a change in, I don't even know what you would call it.
The UK government.
It's a change in the rules, basically, around what, you know, if you have an app that's a Bitcoin wallet, crypto wallet of any kind, really, they basically said that you had to have a money transmission license and do KYC AML with your users. And they pulled that back pretty quickly, claimed it was an error. I think that was a lie. And I said on Why Are We Bullish 2 weeks ago at this point with BTC Sessions that I think this is the direction a lot of these companies are going to be forced to go. And then, of course, a week later, Augustus Karstens or whatever, the button popper, releases this nonsense. It's just so difficult to do. And the other thing, too, is that this like allow and deny list. I mean, who exactly is denying me service based on the coin history in my wallet? Certainly not like my plumber, my butcher, my grocer, my babysitter, my like those people are not going to care. So are they going to come down on everybody who they think has, you know, accepted a coin that at some point in the coin's history went through a non-KYC wallet? Like that, it's not a wise way to try and enforce what they're trying to enforce, even if they had the best, you know, most noble ends in mind, which of course they do not. But even if they did, there's a million other ways to do this better. And again, they show their hand, they put their hubris on display for everybody. And once again, the emperor has no clothes here. This is, as you mentioned, you know, it's impossible to do. And so they put their stupidity on display for the whole world to see. And, you know, I'm not tired of seeing it. Don't get me wrong. It's just over and over again, they prove they have no idea what they're talking about. This graphic is nuts. Like I know we don't often do like graphics on this show, but I'm going to put it up. We'll just have a quick look at it because I'm like having trouble taking this. Even it's just completely insane that they think this is a good idea.
This is
nuts. Like strong, you know, block off ramp unless all tokens are clean off ramp. You're assuming I want to go back to fiat. Okay. Tokens held for over 6 months, no interaction with suspicious addresses. Well, then it's a maybe. And then the deny list, no links to deny list, fully tainted token. Like what qualifies as a fully tainted token? Not to mention, by the way, that they're basically, as you mentioned, they're giving scores to certain wallets. And so these things can change at any given time. There's no hard and fast criterion. It's just like stupid by the same stupid people who do the same stupid things over and over again. If that guy spent as much time coming up with stupid crypto policy, you know, if he spent that time on a treadmill instead, I would take him much more seriously. But he refuses.
He would be setting records, right?
Yeah.
Right. This guy would be challenging for world records if he was.
Yeah, for sure.
There's no good that's going to come out of this on their end. It's just going to be a total waste of time.
Can we talk a bit about, by the way, the source of this, the Rage? The Rage was also the source for the Google Wallet thing. They've been the source for a number of big stories over the last little while. I think it's the first time we've had them in the show, but I am following them on Twitter now, and I'm glad that I do.
Google, instead we talk about them, we are talking about them now. Their Gmail service, it's used by, I don't know how many billions, but it's got to be like number one in terms of...
For sure.
Right, I can't even...
Another free service, right? Isn't that what you said earlier? These great free services.
Right, and they are harvesting tons of data from that. So a number of studies and reports found that the Republican fundraising campaigns, they've been sending out emails, but Gmail, of all things, Gmail, they've been flagging this as spam. So they've been sending these emails out to donors, potential donors, to their supporters, but they may not see it because people aren't actively looking at their spam folder. I'll be perfectly honest. I have a Gmail account too, and I don't check that spam folder frequently. So either way, the fact that Google is doing this, they're saying that there's political bias that Google is implying here because we don't hear about the same thing going on with the Democratic Party, but this going on with the Republican Party. Why? Very, very strange. And if they're doing this, they're basically potentially hurting their ability to raise funds, potentially their ability to have the message seen. They're impacting potentially voters' ability to know what's going on. And in response, Google's saying that their spam filters are neutral, not the case. And this is clearly not the case.
Obviously.
It's not to design any political party or give them any favor. Now, keep in mind who was in power previous to Donald Trump. I think that they were very favorable to that regime. And
President Otto Penn, that guy?
Yeah, think of the all the times there was information talking about particular vaccinations and stuff like that, and it would get scrubbed from that. Like, they were very compliant with dealing with the administration of the day.
But it wasn't even just that. These are the same company who runs the AI program that was giving, like, you know, black trans founding fathers pictures. Remember?
That's like, right.
These guys are a joke. Yeah. They're a joke.
But they say they're going to address these concerns, which their concerns. They said everything is neutral. They're going to propose a pilot program with the Federal Election Commission that would allow political committees to apply for an exemption, and that would prevent emails from being flagged as spam moving forward. Why do we have to do this at this particular? It's 2025, almost 2026. The system itself should be smart enough to figure it out, but it's not.
Yeah, I don't know. What else can I say about this story? Water is wet. Let's move on. These guys are they're obviously biased. By the way, so is the Election Commission. Like, why even bother doing a book report with another group who hates Republicans as much as you do? Like, give me a break, man. What a snooze. These guys are. There's no price to pay for now, but again, signposts. They get caught over and over again going one direction on the political spectrum. So.
You use ChatGPT?
I don't. I am a Grok guy, and I occasionally use ChatGPT because it's free. And actually, I have a couple of comments about this story from corporate here from Mark. So why don't you give me the summary, and then we'll talk about it a bit.
Well, I mean, just some quick dialogue. Have you ever heard or used the agent mode? That was
no.
I've never heard of it, and of course, I've never used it. But apparently, this has been removed from ChatGPT as they progressively upgrade their systems. But even through these upgrades, they're saying that the behavior of the program itself, it's changing. It's almost being downgraded. What is being said in the article is that the model seems to be brain dead, and it's giving some strange and unhelpful responses. And this is a sharp contrast to the previous versions, which wasn't like this. And this potentially is a shift that the AI is getting dumber, and the complex behind the system, or the system that's just getting more complex. And I don't know what else to say, because I'm not a user of ChatGPT. I don't query. I don't know anything about it. But if they're putting out a new version that's worse, that's giving people crappier results, crappier replies, wouldn't people just migrate somewhere else? Right? There are alternatives out there. You mentioned Grok being one of them. Isn't it incumbent on them to put out the very best product? Because this is a cutthroat business. And I have no idea how profitable it is. But one way to not be profitable is to put out a crappy product and shift their customers somewhere else.
But, yeah. Okay, so let me give you my thoughts on this. ChatGPT is a business that has a very particular set of needs, wants, and what I would consider to be necessities for future development and, honestly, its overall survival. It needs daily active users, it wants them to pay, and it needs to pull up the ladder from a regulatory point of view to make sure that no one else can catch them. They were ahead of the curve by a long shot. I don't think they are now, but they were for sure. Grok.
They were the first mover. They had that first mover advantage, right?
They were ahead by years, Len. And, you know, instead of doing anything, this guy Altman just gave interviews where he spits out 20 minutes at a time of pregnant pauses to make it sound like he's thinking, and then gives an answer like he's got a 50 IQ score. I hate that guy, my personal opinion. Let's go back to the story. So they got these three prongs. ChatGPT, I should have a quick look up here. ChatGPT has 123 million users worldwide. The weekly active users are about 800 million. Monthly visits, about 5.7 billion. The free versus paid split is the first piece of interesting data. They need people to pay for this service, but they can't turn away the free users because they need that DAU, that daily active user base, to continue to grow for the company's valuation and for the AI futurism thesis, whatever, okay? How many, by percentage, of course, what is the percentage of users who are free ChatGPT users of that 5.7 billion, or I guess
that'd be like 99% and change.
It's 98%. Ugh, okay. So So 98% and 2% paid. So what does that mean? It means that 98% of the people who go to your service are expecting quality and giving you nothing back except data. But as we've talked about before, the people who use ChatGPT are going there because they don't know anything in the particular silo in which they need to do research. If I go there, for example, when I banged my knee up, I gave MRI photos to a couple of different AIs and you know, decided to see what they spit out about the injury. By the way, all the AIs got the injury wrong, every single one. So it was a clean ACL tear. They all thought, ChatGPT thought I had like osteoarthritis. Grok thought I had meniscus damage, MCL tear. None of it was true. Clean ACL tear. That aside, that's an anecdote. You take that for what it's worth. Okay. So anyway, they have 98% free users, 2% paid. What does that mean? It means 98% of people go there. They research stuff they know nothing about. They don't give any valuable feedback because they don't know anything and they expect quality. Now, the problem with that is that it's a high data demand to have people going there. And as we've talked about before, having a conversation that's deep enough that you end up wanting to marry a ChatGPT bot, or you leave your wife for a conversation with an AI LLM, like that is a stupid use case, but it takes power. It takes compute. Agent mode takes compute. Okay. And you can't do that if everyone is free. So what do? You basically put in this routing service, and the routing service looks at a couple things. Okay. It looks at chat history. It looks at user type and tier, and it looks at what the expected response would be. What is the response people like for this? And it gives them a response. It's more focused on efficiency than it is on quality. And that's what happens when you have a 98% free user base. So what are people going to do about this? I don't know. Are the people who are falling in love with the AI bot making enough disposable income that they're going to go from $0 a month to $20 a month for their chatbot girlfriend? I doubt it. I think OpenAI's got a problem. And I think it's because if I look at the service, like AI cannot be the predominant product that you're selling, I don't think. I look at Grok, great example. When I pay for Twitter, my blue check mark, I get a lot for that. I get an ad-free Twitter experience. I get options on my algorithm. I get different sets of bookmark different sets of bookmark capabilities and whatnot. And then as a added bonus, I get the Grok bot plus the Imagine bot that I use from time to time. Nice. But it's not the thing I'm really paying for. OpenAI has to figure out what their product is. If OpenAI's product is agent mode, then run it in agent mode, focus on agent mode, stop worrying about people who are looking for angel food cake recipes. Stop worrying about people who are looking for you to diagnose their ACL MRI images because they're bored on a Wednesday night. Like, you have to stop doing that stuff. You have to focus on a product that's going to be corporate and profitable. Now, the thing that really tells me they have a problem is that in a world where they are an American company running an AI service in, you know, an era where AI is the panacea for productivity going forward, according to many governments, ours and America's and others, they have tons of content out there and thoughts out there, white papers out there about power consumption and all the needs for data centers, and we have to do this for data, blah blah blah. All these things combined make them a perfect candidate for a big fat government contract. But you know what they do instead? They give the government access to the full suite of services for a dollar and then try and get the regulation to pull up the ladder behind them. It's not worth anything, is the case that I'm making in its current form. And I think they know that too. And I think this shows that they understand that even their user base is flimsy, to say the least, and not something they can sustain a business on.
Remember DeepSeek?
Yeah, of course.
I've never heard much of it since the initial news release, and there were, for people who aren't aware, that's a Chinese AI company that claimed to have been able to match stuff like ChatGPT, but with using a fraction of the hardware. It seems kind of interesting that news came out, but then it's just kind of fizzled, right? And I didn't hear any follow up from that. But regardless, I just wanted to bring that one interesting point up. Microsoft is behind ChatGPT, right? They have a significant.
They own OpenAI, yeah.
They haven't fumbled too many things, when it comes to business.
And actually, if I go to Copilot too, Len, like when you search in Copilot, it actually gives you the option to use GPT-5, 4, whatever, right? So you're right. They're trying, and you're right. They haven't fumbled too many things, but I just don't think this is a. It doesn't seem to me.
Like in terms of products, we could talk about this for a couple of hours, how crappy some of them are. But they, with in terms of like making a profit, bringing out a product for people that they think they need, they're really good. So I'm shocked that they're able, they haven't been able to solve this one. And I'd love to know the stats. I tried looking to see the stats between something like Grok or even Gemini to see the percentage of paid users in comparison to their overall user base. Those two, Grok and Gemini, I couldn't find any data with respect to how many people pay to use the service. So
you could just look up Twitter premium users, right? Because then whether they use it or not is a different story, but they're paying for it at that point.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, there's some overlap there, absolutely. But I'd love to know if ChatGPT is falling behind in this category, or maybe they're just on par with everybody.
$500 billion valuation, right, for ChatGPT. So, or for OpenAI, I guess one or the other.
Talk about valuations, and we could talk about Workday. It traded on the Nasdaq WDAY. It's been flat for the month, and I checked that up because Workday, it's a big company that makes software for human resources out there, and they announced it was hit by a cyber attack. And I did some digging. The article that was provided, I went a little bit further, Joy, because apparently they say the attack didn't directly affect their work system where they are holding sensitive employee data. They say the hackers got us into a separate system. And that's a third-party one that was used for managing business contacts. Again, the article didn't say this, but I did some digging here. The hackers were able to do this by using social engineering. That's how they were able to hack into this. They pretended to be one of Workday's own HR or IT departments and tricked employees into giving access to them. And this kind of stuff happens all the time. People need to be trained on how to see and how to avoid getting attacked through a social engineering scam. So either way, there was the breach that happened on August 6th. That's why I checked for the past month to see if the stock went up or down. It's been flat. I'm shocked. They say they quickly took action by blocking those hackers from the system, and they also added more security to prevent similar attacks. Why they're adding it now after the fact, I don't know. But they're also telling customers that their important data and passwords were not accessed, so that information is safe. And they say that they'll never call or text anybody for a password or other secure information. So if you are a Workday customer and somebody calls you asking for stuff like, you know, what's your password, what's something that's sensitive information, there's probably a hacker out there that got information and they just want to really put the screws to you. So another story about social engineering, another hack. Great stuff.
This was Shiny Hunters again. We've talked about them in the past. Love that name. Good Pokemon reference there for these, I guess, Silver and Gold were probably the first Pokemons to have shinies. Yeah, interesting, man. Just don't. So add this to the list of things you can't do. You can't look for a job. You can't work at a job. You can't lose a job. You can't get sick. Can't buy a car. Can't buy a phone. Can't use a phone. Can't have internet. I don't know what else. Where else is your data not safe? Can't die, right? Wasn't there a funeral home that got hacked a few weeks ago?
And not only that, isn't estate taxes going to be applied and stuff like that? Or wealth, right? So even when you die, you're going to get just chopped in pieces. Your wealth will be at least. What a joke.
That's it. We're out of here. Thanks for stopping in. Come back next week for more latest, greatest in data breaching, overreaching. I'm Joey. That's Len. We'll see you next time. Take care.